This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
And without further ado, he joins us every single Friday here on Three Man Front. It's Brad Edwards of ESPN, ESPN College Game Day on ESPN Radio, stats, analytics, anything that they need of importance, they ask Brad to provide. Brad, welcome into Three Man Front. Hope you're doing well.
Including the playlist, they ask me for that all the time, and I just give them more John Cicada. Were we able to confirm that he was in a luxury box for last Thursday's game against UAB?
As far as I know, and see, Pat and I, we're a part of the UAB broadcast. As far as people that we know that were there inside of Hard Rock Stadium, we are 90% sure that yes, facial recognition, okay, it was one John Cicada. We cannot confirm like the rest of the Miami sound machine.
Yeah. So Brad, I've been to campus there in Bristol a few times, and I know that walking through the hallways, you always hear John Cicada being played on Saturday mornings, getting ready for College Game Day.
What other way would you do it? I think that's the question that needs to be asked.
I mean, if you don't have Cicada, you got what, Big and Rich? I mean, what are we doing? That's pretty much it, right?
You know what? I think there is a serious movement underway for Game Day to change its intro music next year.
Ooh, you heard it here first.
And by the way, Chris Felica, the Bear, is a University of Miami guy, so I'm just going to feed this to him.
Please, let's consider
it a done deal.
If we get this done, Brad, do you know how big this is?
It'd be big for John Cicada.
It'd be huge for John Cicada. It would not impact us one bit.
No, it wouldn't.
Oh, all right, Brad. Before we start talking about actual games this weekend, we get the Big Ten. They said this week, hey, we're coming back. And now the Pac-12, we might have an announcement sometime later this afternoon that they're looking at coming back, maybe Halloween week. And now you've got the Mountain West and the MAC also talking about potentially coming back. What are you hearing in Bristol? And do you like the fact that we could have almost everybody playing football this fall?
Well, sure. I like the idea of having a lot more games because for those of us who have watched the first few weeks, now certainly it's going to be better when the SEC starts playing next week. But man, the pickings are so slim, and you know, you end up with a window where there aren't that many games going on, and then it ends up being a blowout. And each of the last two Saturdays, there's been a span of an hour and a half where I'm like, what am I going to watch? Because there's just nothing on. I mean, I want to see more games. I want to see more good teams out there, you know, competing. And it looks like we're at least going to get the Big Ten. I mean, my overwhelming impression from this past week, I mean, outside of, you know, the Big Ten getting back in and all the questions you could ask about that and what really drove it, is just the way that the other conferences are playing follow the leader. You know, and I really believe that when the Big Ten made its announcement a month or so ago to not play the season, that they felt like everyone else was just going to fall in line behind them. And you know, and when that didn't happen, I think they believed that, well, the other three power conferences that you know, haven't made that decision are going to be forced to just because of the virus. And then when that didn't happen and it became evident that they were actually going to play, and combine that with the internal pressure of the coaches and the players and the parents and everyone else wanted to play, you know, they went out and they got this done. And then when you see the Pac-12 and then following the Pac-12, the Mountain West and then the MAC react to it, it's just like, so how much conviction did you really have with that decision? Because did you really think that was the right thing, or were you just following the Big Ten? Let me make an exception with the MAC. The MAC was actually the first one to announce that they weren't going to play. They did it before the Big Ten. But, you know, you see the others, and look, I can understand, you know, a conference not wanting to be left out, and the Pac-12 is probably feeling that right now, because if they don't play, what are they going to do in the spring? They're the only ones going, at least the only major conference going. So anyway, I think the other conferences, especially the Pac-12, just came off of this looking really weak, because it's basically, you know, we're just going to do whatever the Big Ten does, and we're not really able to think for ourselves.
Brad Edwards, ESPN, joining us here on Three Man Front. Jocks 94.5 on the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline, a game that we kind of let into that's going to be taking place in the ACC. I think it's one of the better matchups we're going to have. You got two talented quarterbacks, Miami taking on Louisville. And I think the line right now is around 2.5. How do you see this one shaping up?
I think this is going to be a fun game. Two really talented quarterbacks and a Louisville offense that was very good last year and I think is going to be excellent this year. A Miami offense that should be a good bit better just because it upgraded at quarterback. And it's a meaningful game, you know, because the ACC doesn't have divisions this year with the addition of Notre Dame. It's now an odd number of teams, 15, so they just decided to have the two best winning percentages reach the conference championship game. And we know Clemson's going to be there. The question is, who's going to get that one shot at Clemson? And I think these are two of the teams that are in the mix. And there's pretty good depth right behind Clemson. I think these two, along with hopefully I won't leave anyone out, North Carolina and Virginia Tech, and who else am I missing? I'm trying to think. Pitt is a team that looked pretty good. The first week, and they didn't play anybody, but they were pretty impressive. So I would say there are four, maybe five teams. Florida State, I think some people might have had on that list this time last week and have taken them off. But yeah, I think there's going to be a pretty good race for number two in the ACC, and it really starts with this game.
Last weekend, the Sun Belt Conference, that was the big headline. Louisiana, you had the Chanticleers. Was it a fluke or the fact that Iowa State and obviously Kansas don't expect a lot from the Jayhawks, but is Iowa State, are they in for a long season or was it just catching lightning in a bottle for the Raging Cajuns?
Yeah, Iowa State's just one of those teams that while they're capable of beating an Oklahoma or a Texas on a good week, they're also capable of losing a game like this on a bad week. Now, if you watched it, some of it was, well, a lot of it was special teams. They gave up two kick return touchdowns, you know, one kickoff, one punt. And while, look, that's part of the game, and, you know, the opponent had to prepare for it just like you did, it's still one of those things that you could easily chalk up to everything that was going on and just how abnormal the preseason was, you know. And I think a lot of coaches didn't get to work as much on certain things as they would have liked to and maybe would have been able to in any other season. And one of the things that often gets sacrificed in those situations is special teams. And so that was really where Louisiana took advantage of it. And so I think you could point to that and say, well, it was really just as simple as two big special teams breakdowns. But Iowa State has shown the ability to do this in previous years, and I just think it comes back to, and I can't remember if it was your show or another one, but last week I was talking with someone about Iowa State and just made the comment that I have a hard time considering them a dark horse because this is a team that it's basically built on three-star players. And while there's a lot to admire about that, it also tells you their margin for error is limited because they don't have a talent advantage over most teams they play. In fact, if anything, they're pretty even in talent to most teams they play. And so this is just an example of that, where maybe they were the more talented team in this game. They probably were. But they weren't so much more talented that they could avoid or overcome big mistakes, and they made two of them.
Yeah, and I made the comment, Cole was on that call with Tom Hart and Mike Golick of Iowa State and Louisiana, and I was texting him during the game. And to what you just said about the talent level, I thought actually, Brad, that Louisiana had more talent overall, as far as just athletic guys. I don't know. They passed the eye test for me. I was very impressed with what Billy Napier did.
Yeah, absolutely. There were certainly plays in that game, you know, where it looked like at certain positions that the Cajuns had the better athletes. And whether that's true or not, it's probably not true up and down the roster. But, but certainly, like, just to my point, if there was a talent edge for Iowa State, it wasn't big enough to allow them to overcome mistakes. And obviously, you know, played out on the scoreboard.
Notre Dame had a big win last week against Duke, and they're hosting South Florida this weekend. In the first half, they looked like they were kind of sleepwalking through it, Brad, but then the second half, the Irish kind of turned the engines on. Your early impressions, I know it's one game, of the Fighting Irish.
Yeah, you know what? It wasn't really all that surprising. I've seen them start slow so many times. And I think this is just a case where, you know, everybody's easing into the season. I mean, even some of the teams that ended up winning with big scores in their openers, I didn't think looked great. You know, Clemson, even though they had a big win, you know, margin wise, and were in total control of the game all the way, I think they looked rusty in a lot of ways, and they can certainly get better. And so, especially with just, you know, once again, how irregular the off season and the preseason were, I don't know that I would expect anyone to look great. And, you know, Notre Dame didn't blow me away. And I look at them up against some of those other teams in the ACC, and I think they're closer to the Louisville's and North Carolina's and Miami's than they are to Clemson right now. And we'll see how much better they can get. We've seen Notre Dame teams in recent years get a good bit better as the season goes on. But, you know, this game coming up on Saturday is one that shouldn't be a huge test for them. But I still wouldn't be shocked if they let South Florida hang around for a little bit.
Rad, another game we're going to see on Saturday, a team from Florida, Central Florida, the first time we get to see the Knights. Of course, their first game against FIU, that was postponed. They take on Georgia Tech. Jeff Collins' team went in and shocked Florida State. Mike Norvell in his debut as the Seminoles coach last week at Doak Campbell. I think this is shaping up. This could be a really, really entertaining game.
This could be a fun game, and UCF is certainly one of those teams that kind of took a punch to the gut this week with the Big Ten announcing that it's coming back, because we're all assuming that the playoff is going to say, you know, Big Ten is welcome, they're eligible, you know, that they've just got to, you know, get in enough games of the eight or nine that they end up scheduling. I guess it would be nine for, the way they laid it out, it's pretty much nine for everybody. So, but that dynamic being introduced to this season, you know, it makes it a lot more difficult, you know, for a team like a UCF to get in. And so while that's a blow to them, I think this is, you know, certainly one of those rare opportunities that they have to impress people against a Power 5 team. And Georgia Tech is not what a lot of people thought they would be. I think many thought they might be the worst team in the ACC. And they've shown that with a much better quarterback who's capable of running a new offense that Jeff Collins was trying to put in last year, but with limited effectiveness due to the personnel from the previous regime, they're a lot more dangerous this year. And so Georgia Tech, I think, is going to be a team that's going to give a lot of people headaches, and we'll see if you know, if UCF is able to get past this one. Because if they do, I think they've got a, you know, got a decent chance to go undefeated.
Brad, a week from right now, we'll be highlighting some of the big matchups in the Southeastern Conference. Is there a game or two that you're looking most forward to in regards to the SEC in week one to kind of whet your appetite a little bit of what we might see for the rest of the year in the SEC?
Yeah, I would probably go with the two games that the Mississippi schools are playing. You know, first of all, Mississippi State at LSU, just because you've got Mike Leach's debut against an LSU team that we know has lost a lot from last year. And while normally you wouldn't spend too much time worrying about this game if you're LSU, because you're talking about a Tiger Stadium that's only going to be about a fifth full, you're not going to have the same type of crowd advantage that you're used to having. And I really don't know what to expect from State. I know what type of offense they're going to run. I can't wait to see, you know, what they get out of the passing game and how sharp that is this stage of the season. And so I think that's going to be fun. And then on the other side, I'm looking forward to seeing both Florida and, you know, and Ole Miss for different reasons. I mean, Florida, because I think they're legitimately good enough to make a run at the SEC title. Because of all that they have coming back from last year. And you would think, especially in week one, with all the continuity, they should be as sharp as anyone. And so I'm expecting them to come out looking more in midseason form than most teams. And I think on the other side, you know, really with Ole Miss, what is Kiffin going to do with that offense? And what's he going to do with those two quarterbacks? How's he going to use Plumlee? All that stuff. It's going to be fun. And the other thing, For those who aren't prepared for it, Kiffin is a guy who buys into analytics. And because of that, he's going to go for it on fourth down in situations that a lot of people are just going to be saying, what? What are you doing? You know, fourth and four, fourth and five, you know, maybe even on his own end of the field. So be prepared for that. I don't know how often they'll convert, but they're definitely going to make the game a lot more exciting.
Brad Edwards, ESPN at J. Brad Edwards. Follow him on Twitter as we do. Brad, we know that you're going to be really busy, but that's good. It's good that we're all busy now that it's college football season. We got more conferences, maybe even more conferences that are going to decide to participate in this 2020 season. Happy football season,
we'll see.
Brad.
All right, guys. Enjoy the weekend. Last weekend with no SEC, so get your golf in now.
Hey, get that thing with Cicada done, all right? Talk to the bear, get
right
it done.
Now. Make it happen.
Yeah. Okay. You're the man. All right, Brad Edwards,
even
thank
make
you.
It happen middle of
we'll
the
talk to you next week.
You know.
Oh,
okay.
Middle of the season.
Ooh.
That'd be good.
Hey, if you're going to do it, I mean, 2020 is a year to do it. You just break out and turn everybody's head, and a big surprise, you got John Cicada all of a sudden for College Game Day. Brad Edwards joining us here on Three Man Front in the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline, an easy drinking hard seltzer. Just 2 carbs and 100 calories. Try it in strawberry, lime, mango, black cherry, or grab the variety pack.
This is Three Man Front.